Hi everyone, this is Estelle Vasudevan and we're with you with another episode of Footmarks. I've got with me Shayan, who is very excited, I think, to talk about one of his favorite cricketers of late, Pathum Nisanga. He's recently done a piece on him as well, which you can find on Good Areas. So Shayan, we're going to talk about Pathum Nisanga, but before I hand it to you, just some background for the listeners and whoever is watching. Pathum Nisanga, of course, you would know him as, you know, one of the better all-format batters in the international game at the moment. Like many subcontinental players, comes from a very poor background. I mean, didn't have that much of an economic backing as a young kid coming through the ranks. But unlike a lot of the, you know, the big stars you see in Sri Lanka cricket, he's not someone who really caught the eye of a lot of people early on in his career. It was only until he got into domestic cricket and came into kind of playing for NCC that a lot of people started paying attention to him. So you can say that he didn't really have that much of attention on him as a youngster. And we'll talk about whether that may have had an impact on how far he's come. So today we're going to talk about basically the two parts of his career so far, right? From making his debut in 2021 to 2023, which by numbers seems to be his worst year, right, in his career. And then how he's gone since 2024 and this year as well. Of course, he's at the moment at the Asia Cup with Sri Lanka, where he's got two half centuries. So Shayan, just to start things off, can you just talk about what he was like in terms of numbers and, you know, as a stats person, like what was he like in his earlier career, that 2021 to 2023 time period?
Yeah, so essentially, I think before the Asia Cup, it was Jared who reached out to me and he wanted me to do a piece on Nisanga. And he talked about how there has been an uptick in his strike rate. So that instantly interested me. I was like, okay, we are talking about an improving player, right? And I've also been working on this piece for the most improved test players, which I think is a piece that will come out soon, like probably in the next couple of weeks or something. But so even in that, I noticed that Nisanka's strike rate had gone up in tests. So he was averaging around 45 only in both the periods that I was looking at. But his strike rate went from 43 to 69. So that was the first time I noticed that, okay, oh, Nisanka has improved his strike rate a lot in test cricket. And when Jared told me about T20, so then I started looking deeper into it. And the first thing that like struck me, I think, was the fact that he's such a good chaser. And his numbers in chasing were just elite, like by any metric. When we talk about how much he has improved in the second part of his career, it was how much better he was when he had a target in mind and when there was a target in front of him, I think. But in the early part of his career, I would still say there was some promise, although he was more of a low scoring anchor. But I still think when I saw the numbers, there was this one domestic season. He had a pretty good season in 2020, I think, in the SLC domestic season. He made some runs in that tournament. And then after that, he eventually, under Mickey Arthur, he makes his debut across all formats in 2021. And even in like the first T20 World Cup, he made runs. Then again in the next T20 World Cup, he made runs. But he was not batting very fast. Like, he was a decent enough anchor, you could say. But not really in sync with, you know, the modern times, I would have to say that. Because even now, as an anchor, you cannot go at 120s or mid-110s anymore, right? And even his average was not very high. He was, like, I think, averaging around 30. So, yeah, his average was 27 and he struck at 112. I don't think those numbers would cut it in modern cricket, right? So, an evolution was due.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like how you, you know, tied in the test performances as well. Because I think for someone who's covered Sri Lanka cricket, right? Like, Pathum Nisanga is a batter who, you know, made a lot of headlines as this, you know, test batter. Like, he's got a good technique. Yeah. He's solid in defense, right? And it's funny, actually, personally, I feel like he was picked in limited overs cricket based on his form in the longer format of the game, right? And he debuted first in T20 cricket, then ODI cricket, all in the same tour. But it was based on, I think he had a couple of seasons in SLC domestic cricket where he was averaging something like 90 plus or something like that, right? And overall, his average was 60 plus. So picked in limited overs cricket because of his test or his longer format numbers. But as you've said, like, he has improved his scoring, not just in T20 cricket, but in test cricket as well, right? And that's kind ODIs, of an interesting thing to note. Yeah, ODI and test cricket. So you'd think, like, this player who is, you know, earmarked to be a test star, he could be good at ODI cricket, but he's kind of turning it on in T20 cricket right now, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the most fascinating bit about his improvement is that it's come in all three formats. I wouldn't say he has improved per se in tests. It's just that his conversion rate has gone really high. And I think it was that Oval 100 that when I first really took notice of Nisanka in test matches, I was like, oh, this is a serious player. And usually we all watch the English cricket season, the test matches, right? So I think that's when a lot of people were noticing that Dhananjay De Silva was doing pretty well, but he's now an established player in test matches for Sri Lanka. And I think even that was, and Kamindu Mendes, of course, everybody was talking about him. And he's definitely one of the, like, one of the best young talents in world cricket right now. But I think that Oval test where Nisanka made 64 and 127 unbeaten in that run chase, I think that's when I first started taking notice of him in test matches. And then in the ODIs, I would say it was the 2023 World Cup where he had a pretty solid tournament. I think he averaged like 40 and struck at 89. Not outstanding numbers, but I would say pretty good. And I think among the under 25 players that World Cup, he was still among like one of the good players. And he was doing quite well for Sri Lanka in that tournament. Not, I think they weren't that good in that tournament, but Nisanka was definitely one of the bright spots for them in a way. I think that's fair to say, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like he's that's been one of the features is that he's been kind of a standout performer for Sri Lanka, hasn't he? And, you know, coming back to the Oval 100 that he made, I think in general, everyone took notice after that knock because he'd scored hundreds before, but he'd had a lot of back issues. And, you know, I think Sri Lanka cricket was also wanting to kind of maximize his abilities in limited overs cricket. So he didn't get a lot of opportunities in tests either, although again, it's very strange, right? Like that, you know, this player who is, he seems like his game is made for test cricket, where he doesn't really feature too much in it. So that Oval 100, I think, caught everyone's eye. In terms of ODI cricket, he's always been good. But as you said, like exceptional numbers, you wouldn't say, but he's kind of been that solid kind of opener, right? And I think he's a classic case for teams like Sri Lanka, where you have to question, okay, this is a player who you've given opportunity after opportunity, because as you said, you know, he was striking at like 112, right? In 112 in his first 3 years, and that doesn't cut it in modern day T20 cricket. But they kept giving him opportunities, and they are kind of seeing the rewards now. So it is also, I think it creates a bit of a dilemma for selectors in teams like Sri Lanka, where you don't have that many options. Do you stick with the players who, you know, they're making runs and they have the potential, they have a high ceiling, or do you, you know, you give them a couple of opportunities. If it's not working, it's not working, right? So he's one of the ones who goes the other way, where they've stuck with him and he's really rewarded them, right? Just on, like, as I said, like for someone who's covering Sri Lanka cricket, I've seen him since he was playing domestic cricket, and it was always kind of this thing where he's going to be a good test cricketer, right? But I wonder, as like an outsider, a person who doesn't see him in domestic cricket, you only see him when he's in international cricket. And as you said, you know, it's mostly the big series that you see players like Nisanka, right? What was your take on him early in his career? And what would you say was like the general consensus about him as a player? Like, was he, I don't think he was as highly rated as some Sri Lankans would have rated him.
Yeah, I don't think so. I remember doing this piece early on when I had joined Good Areas. This was about the best right-arm bashers in T20 cricket. So essentially, I actually went back to that piece and I saw that Nisanka was one of the players who was not doing well against right-arm pace. So I think that was one place where I noticed that yes, Nisanka wasn't doing too well in T20s back then. And then I think for me, it was that ODI World Cup when I like probably took notice of Nisanka that, oh, he's looking like a good player. Then 2024, actually, he has a breakthrough year in ODIs, I would say. He averages 63 and strikes at 106. And, you know, I think it's a bit unfortunate that Sri Lanka don't play the Champions Trophy. If they played the Champions Trophy, maybe, you know, we could see more of Nisanka and how he performs on the biggest stage. But I think looking back, there was this one innings that he plays in the 2022 Asia Cup against India as well. I think when Sri Lanka defeated India, actually, in the Asia Cup that they won, I think Nisanka also makes runs in that game, if I'm not wrong. I think he makes like a 50 or something. And that was also chasing. So I think that's one constant theme that we see with him. So early on in his career, he was getting a lot of these first innings 50s as well. But, you know, I think chasing is what suits him more. And it's really come to the fore since that 2024, since the start of 2024, and he's been absolutely magnificent. Like, I think both in terms of average and strike rate and consistency, I think even on tough wickets, he's the sort of guy that you can trust. I think I was looking at the scorecard of this one game where I think New Zealand ended up defending 108 at Dambola. I don't know if you covered that game or not, but in that game, the only player who made runs, any runs for Sri Lanka was Nisanka, who made 52 out of the 103 runs. And he gets out, I think, towards the end. So if he, you know, he almost won them the game on his own. If he got like a little bit more support, they would have won that game. So I think that's the sort of player that we are talking about here. And it's, I think, another thing that's really like good about him is that he has upped his game against both spin and pace. So initially when he came onto the board, when he came on, he was not that good against spin and both against spin and pace. I think he was okay against both, and his overall numbers were also pretty like middling. But I think since this now, this recent period, he's become very good against both types of bowling.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the keys to his success, right? Because obviously as an opener, you're going to face a lot of pace bowling. But if you want to be successful, then you have to transition that, you know, success into spin bowling as well, because you're going
to
face that.
And playing
later
in Sri Lanka,
in your innings,
you need to know how to spin.
Yeah,
spin,
absolutely.
Right?
I was going to say, like, you know, you mentioned the conditions he bats in limited overs cricket, particularly ODI cricket, conditions in Sri Lanka are not easy to bat in, right? Like, I mean, anyone who's followed Sri Lanka cricket of late would know that it's very, very spin friendly. And, you know, power scores are like 230, 240. It's very 90s type cricket, like coach Sanat Jasiri playing that type of cricket. So, it's not easy, the amount of runs he's been scoring and how consistent he has been. And I think that is probably the key to his success, or why we are talking about him right now. It's not just that he's upped his strike rate, is that he's still making runs, right? It's not the 20s, 30s that he's making, right? It's he's been consistently good. I was just going through some, of course, the piece that you wrote and something by on ESPN as well, where it says like since 2024 in tests, he's averaging 50 plus. And no opening the world with 400 runs in that stretch averages that much, right? In T20 cricket, he's hit 970 runs at a strike rate of 142. And he averages nearly 49 in ODI cricket as well. So he's really, really kind of, it's very much a kind of, it's almost like a software update, right? Where he's just updated himself into a different type of player. You spoke about him playing pace and spin well. There's one shot, right, that we were focusing on, the pull shot, and how he's gone from like decent at it to like one of the elite pull shot players in the current game.
Exactly. So I think against spin, he was striking at like 104 or something when he was playing the pull shot. I think that's not ideal, because ideally you think of the pull shot and you're like thinking of it as an attacking option, right? Because then you can like, if you can play the pull shot, you have that entire mid wicket region like that you can access. And I think if you're not really scoring fast, then I think it's easier to set fields, because the bowlers can also plan accordingly. They know that, okay, he's just going to knock it around. Even if he's going to play the pull, it's not going to be a very attacking shot. But I think that has really transformed. Like, he went from 104 to like 280 odd strike rate. So the comparison that we put, it was like watching Jack Callis in early T20s to Abhishek Sharma right now, where he's just like smashing the ball everywhere. And I think the other one was against pace. He was still like pretty decent against when he was playing the pull shot. He was averaging, he was striking at like 180, but he used to get out a bit. I think that has reduced now, and even his control percentages have improved against when he's playing the pull shot in both cases. So as Jared kept, I think, reiterating in the piece, that it's like a software update where it's not that he has massively changed his style of play. It's just that he has gotten better at almost everything he is doing. And we see this in the way he builds his innings and how he chases. And I think how he starts his innings, in the sense that I think the big improvement for him was how much better he gets in the power play. But even in the middle overs, he doesn't really slow down all that much. Like, he's still pretty good. And he's not actually lasting till the death overs a lot. And I think that's a good thing in a way, because for a T20 batter, for an opener in T20s, I think it's ideal if they, you know, I think in this modern era, that approach of, you know, taking it deep and like accelerating at the death, I think that doesn't really work all that well, unless, you know, you can do it very consistently. Or even then, I think if you play a catch-up knock, people are just going to criticize it, I think, no matter who you are. So I think it just makes sense. In a run chase, I think I've got no issues. You take your time, you play however you want. I think run chases, ultimately, you just want to get the win in the bag, and that's the most important thing there. But I think batting first, it's important that you maximize the power play and don't stall things too much in the middle over. So it's, I think when we saw his death overs true strike rate, it was pretty high in that early period. And I think that gave us an indication that, okay, he can bat faster. And that, I think the best thing was that he up the strike rate and average both in the power play. And we'll talk, I think, in a bit more depth about what shots he's added in the power play and why he is so good at playing pace, both pace and spin in the power play, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have a couple of more like key things to talk about. So let's take a short break. And when we're back, we'll talk about how he's been so good at chasing. And, you know, as Cheyenne said, the other shots that he's kind of added to his repertoire.
Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
Okay, so we're back with Cheyenne. Cheyenne, we were talking about how good he's been with the pull shot, right? And how he's kind of upped his game. I think it's very interesting also that, you know, you and Jared both mentioned about how he's not really changed his game per se, right? Like he's not become a different batter, but he's just doing what he was doing at a much better rate, right? And that's kind of, I think, when you look at a player like Pathum Nissankar, it's also a lesson to not like limit players to a format, because it would have been easy to kind of limit him to being a test cricketer, right? Yeah. And, he, you know, whatever his strike rate, he would have been a decent test cricketer. But the way he's kind of upped his game in terms of just getting better at what he's already good at has made him the kind of player that he is right now. Let's get to the chasing thing. I think it's very interesting that, you know, it is very much a mindset thing, right? When it comes to chasing, in that you know what you have to do. When you're setting a target, it's slightly different, and I suppose in a way more challenging, in that you don't know what's going to be enough. I mean, we've seen the last couple of games in the Asia Cup where 160, 170 have looked like good totals batting first.
Yeah.
And then teams have chased them quite comfortably, right? So with Pathum Nissankar, there's a very slight comparison to someone very important in the piece, right? About his chasing.
Yeah, it's actually Varun who puts it in the piece that, you know, when he saw those numbers, he's like, okay, this is like Virat Kohli numbers. So I think initially it was Saurabh who was saying, okay, no, we can take it out. But then I think we kept it, and Jared also, I think, liked it and, you know, rewrote it a bit. And the way he put it was that it's like he's putting on a Virat Kohli costume when he's batting second. And I think that really makes sense, right? Because with Kohli, I think what you get is when he's chasing, he is going to get the job done more often than not. And he's not going to, you know, necessarily bat slow or anything. It's just that he's going to bat at a high, like, he's going to stay in sync with the game and he's going to, you know, get the job done towards the end. And I think that's what we also saw with Nissankar. So if I actually go and look at his numbers in chasing, how many 50s does he have right now? I'm interested to see that, because it will tell us, it will give us a bit of an idea as to how he's getting the job done. So, yeah. So he's striking at exactly 150. I think this also includes the Asia Cup games, and for the piece that we did, that was like, I think most of it was before the Asia Cup. So the numbers are a bit different and everything, but he has 7 half centuries and 17 innings. And I think that is the sort of consistency that you expect from a player like Virat Kohli, as we put in the piece. And I think that's, I think probably why Varun decided to compare it with him. And because Kohli is also like this conventional sort of a player, right? He's not like your slogger who is going to come and just play across the line randomly. Although in T20s, I don't think there is any issue with that. You need to have those options as well. And I think you can be a classical type batter and yet be successful in T20s, I think, with this sort of a template. I think that's what Jared and Varun were talking about Rizwan and Babar in the footmarks that they did. They were basically like, they don't need to become Heinrich Klassen or Nicholas Puran when they're batting against spin,
exactly,
right? You can just up your game. And I think Nissankar is probably a good example for them to look at and probably replicate a similar sort of game and, you know, get better at T20 cricket. They don't have to do anything flashy, simply because, you know, what he is doing is he's starting well in the power play. And I think he's not a very fast starter in the sense that in his first 5 balls, he'll play at a good rate. Then he'll up it, like it peaks at the 11 to 15 ball mark. Then he slows down a bit. And then again, he's going at like a normal clip. So I think it's a very anchor-like pattern, if you say, how he's building his innings. But it's, again, as we said, it just improves his strike rate in every single block. I think that was the most fascinating thing for me, that he has not changed who he is as a player, even in this aspect. It's just that he's gotten better at every single thing that he is doing. And I think it a big reason for it is that his pull shot has improved so massively. But he's also pretty good on the offside, right? Like if you see his cover drives or his cut shot, those are cut shots both against pace and spin, I would say. He's pretty good at that. Although his cover drive numbers against pace haven't been that good recently. But I think that's fine. That can happen with anyone, like over a small sample size or not necessarily a small sample size. But we're talking about like he might have played what 30 cover drives. So it can happen. That's not a big deal, I think. But he's very good on the offside and on the onside. So I think that's what Jared was also talking about yesterday, that it's really hard to set a field for such a player, I think, because
exactly
if this player can sweep and slog sweep both against spin, and then you probably, you know, you don't keep a fielder in that backward point region, but he can also cut the ball, and he has in fact added reverse sweeps as well. I'm sure you must have caught that, right? Because I was going through NV play and watching clips of him, of his batting, and I think his reverse sweep is also a pretty interesting option that he has added. If he can do it more consistently, that would be pretty amazing.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, right? Like you think of conventional batter and you don't really think of shots like that, but as you said, like whatever shots that he's playing, he's kind of perfecting it to a degree that it's very difficult to set a field for him. I think in the piece as well, you and Jared have mentioned how, like, as a opposition captain, it's very tough to set a field because he can pull from mid-on to, you know, the entire leg side is open to him, right? When he's pulling the ball, because he can pick out the spot that he wants. And I mean, we're recording this the day after the Bangladesh-Sri Lanka Super Fours game at the Asia Cup. Yeah. And like, in yesterday's game, there were a couple of those pull shots, right? Like one in front of square, one behind square. Just nailing the ball complete, right? And I think another aspect that we have to look at is his boundary hitting ability, which has improved massively.
Yeah.
Like in comparison to those first 3 years of his career, right? I have like a small number. This, again, it's from ESPN's piece, right? It says that until the end of 2022, he used to hit a six every 37 balls. He has cleared the rope once every 25.29 balls since 2024. So that's a big, big difference, right? It's 10 deliveries.
Yeah.
And the fours have come at a faster rate as well. He hits one every 6.1 balls since 2024, whereas he was going at nearly 10 deliveries before that. So the boundary hitting ability is another thing that he has really worked on, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think in modern cricket, I think even if you are an anchor, you need to score boundaries. Like, you just cannot get away with the fact that, okay, I'm going to bat through and I'll hold up one end. And, like, that is fine. You hold up an end, that is okay. But you have to score boundaries even within that, I would say. So, I think with Nisanka, I think the thing is that because he can score boundaries on both the offside and the onside, and he has upped his four, I think his strike rotation was never really an issue, I think, to begin with. He was still rotating strike pretty well. And that is what you expect from a conventional anchor type batter, right? But what he really improves his game is that he starts hitting a lot more fours and sixes. So he's still not become like a massive six hitter or anything. It's not like he's not like a Rohit Sharma type six hitter who's just going to come and slap sixes everywhere in the field. But he will hit a lot of fours. And I think that really aligns with the sort of player that he is. And against both pace and spin, he's pretty much par when it comes to hitting sixes. So it's not even like he can't hit a six. But when it comes to hitting fours, there is the massive improvement that we see. Even in sixes, he has improved. Because earlier, as you mentioned, 36 balls, right? For hitting a six.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like, if he's going to last an innings of 36, 40 balls, he's going to hit one six in that. That is not ideal even for an anchor, I think. Like, you do expect more sixes now, I think. That's just the demand of the modern game. And I think it's really great to see that he has caught up with times. And I think some of it is also just the fact that he's coming closer to his peak ages. Like, when he started, he was only 22, right? So, till the age of 25, he was playing and he was doing fine. Not great, but I think especially in ODI cricket, he was still fine. He was still able to, like, he had that big year. And, like, he had a good World Cup. I think he was pretty good in the qualifiers as well. When Sri Lanka played the World Cup qualifiers, he was pretty good in that as well. I was looking at the numbers. And then he had that double century against Afghanistan. And I think someone pointed out in the comments of the Nisanka video that we did that it was really that double century where they felt that Nisanka has upgraded. Do you also like share the same feelings that like he has become a different sort of a player since?
I think it would definitely have had an impact on him, right? Because mentally,
confidence.
Like to get to the 200 run mark, and I think we've mentioned in the piece, like in the past, he probably would have taken 100 overs to score to double 100, right? But just the way he played in that innings, and I remember it was kind of I think as a Sri Lankan cricket fan, sometimes for a lot of fans, it was kind of a bittersweet thing because Sana Jayasuriya's record was broken, right? But still, to have someone like Nisanka, I think in that side, if you look at that side or you compare him with his opening partner, Kusal Mendes, like you're probably not going to pick Nisank as the guy who goes on to make a double hundred in ODI cricket, right? You're probably going to back the other guy. But I think since then, as you said, it's kind of switched, I think, his mindset as well as people who are watching, that this is a guy who can, you know, he has the ability to, you know, he has that range. He can play the anchor and he can, you know, bat out an innings, or if you talk about test cricket, he can play that role. But he also has the power now to be an explosive batter in T20 cricket. I think an important fact that doesn't get a lot of attention is the fact that he did work on his fitness as well. I know he's had a lot of back injuries, but in terms of strength, he has worked a lot on it. I recall reading an interview where he speaks about like getting dropped from the ODI team after I think his 9th or 10th ODI, and then having a period,
he made only 86 runs, I think,
where he worked very, very hard.
And
he worked very, very hard on his fitness. And I think that power game, part of it is coming from there, right? Because he was always timing the ball well, but that ability to now clear the boundary is partially coming from the fact that he is a lot more fit and he's a lot stronger, right? You mentioned his age and coming to kind of his peak as a batter. He's only 27, right? So it feels like there is more to come from him.
I have traveled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things: the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to Sally.com Good Areas and use the code Good Areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Sally.
Yeah, I think definitely. So when Jared was looking at the numbers and all the piece that I had written, so I think what he says is that his theoretical limit against spin is even higher, because in the middle overs, I think he was striking at 126, which is probably not too bad considering he's playing most of his cricket in Sri Lanka and you don't always need to go, like, you don't need to attack every single ball, and I think you have to adjust for conditions and everything. So I think according to that, it's still all right. But he can still up it, right? Because we know that in the power play, he actually plays spin pretty well. And he doesn't really have issues, I think, against SLA, against slow left-armers also. We were looking at his numbers yesterday. He was pretty solid even against that. So I think another player that I was talking about recently was Ibrahim Zadran, I think, on one of our lives. So I was like, he is also a very conventionally, like, correct technique, technically sort of, like, he's a very correct player, right? When you see him bat, straight batted, and he's had a lot of success in ODI cricket. He made a century against Australia in the World Cup, and then he made a century in the Champions Trophy as well, 177, I think, against England. So I think what we see is that, but even he has not been able to adapt to T20 cricket. Like, his strike rates are consistently low, and slow left-armers are really able to tie him down and not allow him to score runs fast at all. But I think with Nisanka, that is just not the case, simply because I think he has more scoring options available to him, and maybe a lot of players in world cricket who are, you know, aspiring to be this sort of anchor type player up top can look at this sort of template that Nisanka has set, especially for teams that are not on the level of, you know, India, South Africa, Australia, England, like where they have all these like aggressive batters who can go like smash the ball everywhere. I think even England, I think finally when they play in Sri Lanka, I think we will know their batters and how they go against them. Nisanka, if England play in Sri Lanka, I think Nisanka would probably make that England team, right? Because they need someone who knows how to play spin properly. So I think that was one thing about his theoretical limit, that against spin he can still get better. And I think even in the first innings right now, he is not that great. In this recent period, he hasn't done that well. Although he has taken a few more risks and everything, I think that's why he's tried to bat faster, I think, because his true strike rate had improved. So I think that's fair. But we do expect him to get better in that phase of the, in that period of the game as well. So I think, interestingly, another comment that, since you mentioned his fitness, there was another comment on that YouTube video that we did on Nisanka, that he's apparently worked with Zubin Bharucha, who's like worked with Rajasthan Royals, I think, and he's also worked with Jaiswal at getting him up to speed in T20 cricket, if I'm not wrong, from whatever I've read a little bit online. I think there was that comment that mentioned Jaiswal's example. So similarly, I think this was before India came to Sri Lanka last year, I think July, August, around that time. So again, I think maybe this also has a role to play that he's getting help from one of those guys who's, you know, who has a good reputation for, you know, helping players and getting the best out of them. So as you mentioned, him improving his fitness, him just like maybe getting more mental clarity in a way that he's much better chasing. So we see that aspect of his game as well, I think. And now this camp that we're talking about with Zubin Bharucha. So that's also a pretty good combination to have, right?
Yeah, I think the key with Nisanka, and I wonder how many other players have this as well, is that you regularly see the fact that he's trying to do as much as possible to improve. I don't think he's the type of player who sits back and thinks, you know, I'm making the most number of runs for Sri Lanka. My record is the best in this side. And that's good enough. I don't think he's that type of player. And I wonder, I spoke about his background, right? So his dad was a groundsman at one of the big grounds in Kalutara, which is in the south of Sri Lanka. And from whatever I've read, I've heard about how he used to do a lot of training with his son. And it's possible that, like, you know, that really kind of hammered in this idea of hard work. And that's why I mentioned the fitness as well, right? Because it's he was not an unfit player or overweight player. It's simply that, you know, his strength maybe could have improved. So when you talk about his spin hitting ability and, you know, how he's improved on the pull shot and all of that, like, to me it reflects a player who is willing to do the work to get better. And you mentioned about this camp as well, like, I think Sri Lanka do bring in a lot of consultants. But I wonder how many of the players actually benefit long term, because you see a lot of players being a bit backward in terms of, you know, approaching professionals like that and asking them, you know, proactively asking, what else can I do? I remember an example being given. I think it was at the 2021 World Cup. Somebody behind the scenes was telling me about, like, you know, how guys like Pathum Nisanka, Charit Asalanka would actually, like, you know, they had the session with the statistician or the analyst as a team. But these are guys who would go, you know, on their own to him and ask him questions on how, what they need to do, things like that. And I think that is one of the key reasons why he has improved. Yeah. I mean, this is all anecdotal, right? We don't know how many players do that. But as a player, you have to think that if you want to get better at the game, not just be the best in your team, but be one of the best, right? Those are things that you have to pay attention to, because as you rightly said, like, his record from 2021 to 2023 is not good enough for international cricket, right? To be a successful player. So now we've spoken about, like, the three formats and, like, how he's improved. Like, where do you think he stands amongst all format players? Because we don't see a lot of them, right, anymore. We see a lot of specialists now in international cricket. Where do you think he stands?
Like, he has to be right up there when we're talking about all format openers, right? Like, I think another example is obviously Ben Duckett is pretty good across all three formats. He's doing pretty well for England, I think. And because his style is obviously very different from that of Nisanka, he will not leave the ball at all. He, even in test cricket, he is just going to go hard and, you know, he's going to smash the ball everywhere. And he's that whole baseball style of play, and he's like one of the important players in that. So much different sort of a player, but I think he's there. And I think Travis Head is obviously another great all format player at the moment, who's doing pretty well in all three formats. I would say from India, Jaiswal hasn't played a lot of ODIs yet, right? And even in T20s, he hasn't. Like, it's probably just the fact that India have a lot of talent and they already have a lot of players. Who is he going to replace? It, like, that's what the question becomes. Although I do think he can make the T20 side eventually. He's just too good a player to not do that. But I think hypothetically, he would also do pretty well in all three formats. Gill is also pretty good, I would say, in whatever T20s he's played, like, in the IPL. And for India, he's been good in ODIs and now tests as well. So he's, I think, in that conversation for sure. Like, he may not be the best, but he's definitely one of the consistent performers in all three formats, right? And we are seeing a very, you know, upward trajectory in all three. We have seen that upward trajectory in all three formats for him. So I think that is the biggest thing for me, that, okay, this is a player who has really improved. And as you mentioned, he seems to have that drive and that passion to, you know, really succeed. I think those things do matter, as much as people like to say, okay, it's a psychobabble and all that. But I don't think it's true always. Like, you have to consider the mental side of things as well in cricket, because a lot of things, like, where you come from, what your background is, how much you value things, I think. And Like, maybe he has that hunger that, yes, I want to be one of the best players in the world and one of the best players that Sri Lanka has probably ever had. So I think another example of this was Dimuth Karunaratne, right? He used to have this goal that I want to score 10,000 test runs. He didn't end up doing that. Yeah. I think that's probably a bit unfortunate for him. But he had a pretty solid test career, was one of the better test openers during his time. And similarly, I think Nisanka might also be a similar kind of player in a way that he has that passion to, you know, keep getting better and better at every stage of his career. And it will be interesting to see how teams plan for him, because I'm pretty sure there are still ways to slow him down. It's just that how do teams like go through the numbers, go through the video clips and everything and try and figure out a weakness for him. I still think when he plays the pull shot against pace, his control is not as good. So I think you might have also noticed that at times he might play a false shot as well. Like, he's trying to pull the ball, but it may not like come off. I think it was in the Zimbabwe series where I noticed this. I actually was watching a game randomly because I was supposed to do this piece on him. So I was watching a game and I think in that I noticed that, okay, oh, he's played, I think, one or two false shots when he was trying to pull the ball. But I think that's okay. That much can happen with any player. And in T20s, it's good only if you have false shots, I think, because it shows that you're trying to take more risks and attack. And I think another thing with Nisanka, I was just thinking about this. Apart from probably India, he would make every single team in this Asia Cup, right? He has to make every single Asia Cup team.
I mean, easily,
so,
right?
Like, yeah. If we, I think we just take the example of Pakistan and Afghanistan, what we noticed, I think, especially with Pakistan, what we were noticing is that this new team, they've moved on from Rizwan and Babar and they're going with this whole new modern cricket brand and everything that they're... And I think there has been some improvement to their credit. I wouldn't say that it's been completely bad, but in this Asia Cup, if you've seen them bat, it has been so painful. Like, I've just been watching and I've been going like, what are these guys doing, man? Like, Shaheen Afridi is coming and bailing you guys out. Come on. So, the problem, I think, for me, and I think Robin Uthappa also brought this up on the podcast with Jared, that these guys are either slogging or they're blocking. They don't have like a middle ground where they can rotate effectively. And even their slogs are not that efficient. So, slogging doesn't just mean that, intent doesn't just mean that, okay, you want to hit every ball. That is all, that is good. But you need to have the execution as well, right? And I think with Nisanka, maybe they can take an example of a player like that and try to, you know, I don't know how much you can replicate that. Maybe, obviously, every player has their own style and everything. But a player of his mold, I think, would really be handy. And I think I've done this piece on Bangladesh, which will also be out. So even there, I was noticing that there has been an increase in their strike rates and everything. But Nisanka would easily make that team. Like, he would make their team so much better. Even though Bangladesh managed to defeat Sri Lanka in the Super Four games, as we talked about. But he would still make their team easily. So it's really good to see that he's one of the better players. And I think that's why I asked Varun for this cluster analysis. So I just wanted to see who his nearest neighbors are, where he was then and where he is now. So I think that was a very important part of the theory of the piece that I wrote. So earlier, he was along with the likes of Fakhar Zaman, David Malan and Aaron Finch. And all these have had good times in T20s. It's not that they're completely bad T20 players. But at that stage, Malan had been sort of found out, I think, in T20 internationals. He had a great start, but he wasn't replicating those numbers anymore. Regressing more to the mean that we'd seen in English T20 cricket, whatever he had played. And similarly, Finch was also late career. Finch, we all know what a bad drop-off he had, right? Like, it seemed like he couldn't buy a run. I have seen a lot of Finch, I think. And at his best, he was a very good player. And he would really, he could also attack and he could play long innings, everything. He was a pretty good player. And especially, I think, T20 internationals, he was very good. He had that one innings against England also back in the day where he made 156. So Aaron Finch was there. And Fakhar Zaman also, somehow he has never maximized his potential in T20s. I don't know why. It seems like he's a better ODI player. So that was a decent group to be in, but those guys were all like not doing well themselves. So there he has gone to like this Shubman Gill, David Warner, Josh Butler cluster. Of course, Warner sort of like towards the end of his career, but Josh Butler and Shubman Gill, I would say, is still pretty good company to have, especially when you're looking to be that sort of a player who can bat long, but also keep putting pressure on the opposition.
Yeah, and as we've mentioned, right, he's only 27, so he's theoretically, at least, his best batting years are ahead of him, right? And I think you touched on a really good point when comparing against the Pakistan batters, in that, like, if you are a conventional batter, it does not mean that you can't be successful at T20 cricket, right? And intent doesn't necessarily mean chasing after everything. You have to work on your skills and your execution at the end of the day, because you can, I mean, anyone can come and swing the bat like Abhishek Sharma, right? Anyone can do that. But not everyone is going to get the runs that he's getting right now. So it's not just simply a matter of just swinging from the hips. And Nishank has shown that, right? I think he never really loses his shape, whatever shots he plays.
Yeah, that's very
true. He is still that classical player, but he is scoring at a much faster rate. So I think there's a lesson to be learned in that as well. So I think with that, we can kind of conclude this episode of Footmarks. I think we went through everything we've discussed in the piece as well. So if you want to read the piece, you can go to Good Areas. If you want to watch the video we've done on the piece, you can go to the Good Areas YouTube channel as well. So all the content is there. You can go through it. Of course, you can get in touch with Chayan or myself on the piece in the comments. We're both on Twitter as well. I don't think Chayan spends that much time on it. I don't either. But you can get in touch with us if you want about this piece and if you have anything to say about it. So that's, I think, the end of this episode of Footmarks. Thanks for joining the two of us. We hope to see you soon on another episode.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.